joining us for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Well, obviously disappointed of the fact that we haven't made it, but as I said about a month ago, start planning for next year now.
Well,
should have been planning for next season.
Let's start with Leeds then, shall we? Because, I mean, it's look, the dream isn't over. They've got to just win 13-0 and hope that other results go their way on Sunday. But
which we know won't happen, so that's the end of that.
It is, isn't it? But, you know, there's now question marks over whether Gary Monk is going to be around, what's going to be happening with Massimo Cellino. There's lots of reports today in the Yorkshire Evening Post that Andrea Radrazzani and Massimo Cellino are coming to some sort of negotiation or some sort of agreement over and Radrazzani taking over 100%. I suppose the sooner that things happen, the better, so Leeds can get sorted for next season, KB.
Well, of course, I mean, because every minute, every day now does matter. Because, for example, looking about next season, looking for players, and the scouts should be out the last month watching players, surveying, doing reports back to the head chief scout, whoever he is these days, and getting ready, and then reporting to the owner, so the owner can say yes or no or maybe. But the problem is, because you've got split ownership, so we need two people to agree something, who have made different views. So the danger is indecision. And the danger in that, of course, is the best players get snapped up. What I always did at Chelsea, and in fact we tried to do at Leeds, is once we knew we weren't going to get relegated, no chance for promotion, then you start blooding the kids, because you first of all give them experience to find out how good they are, have they got the right, we always think they've got the right ability, because we wouldn't sign them otherwise, but are they maturing? What's more important, have they got the right mental attitude to cope with pressure at a high level? And if you put them in with eight or nine other experienced players, and they're under no pressure, it doesn't really matter other than for pride of winning, then you take a chance, give them a risk. If it turns out they're okay, then you know you've got an advantage in playing them next year. If, on the other hand, you know that they haven't got the right temperament, mental attitude or strength, then, of course, you quietly pass them out and start replacing other people. And the danger is that, because we've been in the playoffs for so long this year, the last few games have been a total disaster. And I wonder what's gone wrong. Any problems in the dressing room, or did they get stage fright as the importance of the games increased? We don't know. It's probably not right that anything like that should become public anyway. But the hierarchy at the club should have been investigating, noting, listening, questioning, find out what's going on. Also see what's available overseas. As for Monk, I've always been a supporter of his. He did a good job at Swansea. He came to Leeds when he was in a hiatus. And Massimo was appointing a new manager every few months. And I thought he did a good job. He took over when Leeds were in the bottom three. And he got us into the playoffs, which is good. And all of a sudden just ran away towards the end, which is a pity. And he ran away, but we still got to the playoffs, albeit not finally. We're losing quite a few top players, young players, quietly. Sam Byram, Lewis Cook, mentioned just two to come to mind. So that, I've always said a football club is like an iceberg. The fans and the public see the tip of the top that's floating above the water. All the work is done below the water, which the fans never see. whether it's the girls in the box office, the guys on the door, or the selection of the catering, or the decision on new kit. All these things have to be decided. And of course, obviously, the maintenance improvement of fan facilities at the game. So, we will know when the owners decide on the question of Massimo selling out. I have an understanding that the new owner or the new partner has got the option of buying out Massimo at the end of the season if we don't get promotion. So I would think the best thing to do, with Massimo having so many other problems and distractions, the best thing he could do would be to sell, take his money, and let the other guy get on with it. But then we have to ask ourselves, is he going to come to England to run Leeds United? Or is he going to be another absentee owner that we have at so many places, like Blackburn and Leicester City, to name just two off the top of my head, where they put a local guy in, or they put their local guy from whichever country they come from, who had no knowledge of English football, and they get swamped by all, get rich quick charges, he could give advice at inflated prices, just to take a few bob out. It happens to so many clubs. In the meantime, of course, the end result on the field isn't good.
Quite right, KB. Just talk about another West Yorkshire team while we're talking football and Huddersfield. This is the story that's come out this week, KB. The EFL wrote to Huddersfield to request their observations regarding team selection in their 2-0 defeat by Birmingham City. They made 10 changes for this trip to St Andrews, and they've obviously already sealed their playoff place, but... I would imagine Blackburn boss Tony Mowbray, he has questioned Town's lineup. I think Nottingham Forest aren't very happy with it either. But this is quite a strange thing. The Football League contacting Huddersfield Town about their team selection in this stage of the season. It's very strange.
Well, has Huddersfield made any comments?
No, not yet.
Well, of course, the question is that I don't have the Football League rules to hand. But there should be, I suspect there's some clause in it that says you've got to field your strongest team at all times. And because obviously the result of the Huddersfield-Blackburn game could have effects upon the relegation fight. So that's where the Football League are coming from. And it's a difficult one. But on the other hand, the Football League have turned and said the result will stand. So, not quite sure whether they're making such a song and dance about it if they're not going to act. But the real problem, again, you see, is that, if you make them replay the game, there'd be bad blood. There's no guarantee that the Huddersfield players will play any better. They won't want to get injured or hurt or attract suspension. So it's not a very good situation. I think some of the Football League should consider at their AGM, their conference, and come up with rules and regulations. For example, a punishment could be points deductions. And if that came about, then clubs would not field do any other than field the best team, would they?
KB, let's move on. Big talk this week as the election is gaining some traction, of course, as we head towards June 8th. But Brexit's been on the...
voting today, aren't they?
Yeah, there's local elections today. That's right, polls opening for those today.
So the fact is, traditionally, there's always a pretty low turnout at local elections. So it doesn't always indicate what it's likely to be in the general election. But it will certainly give a little indication, at least, of the thinking of the ordinary man in the street. Because if the Labour lose significant numbers of seats in the local elections, it's not going to all go well for June the 8th, is it?
Well, okay, Ben. Obviously, one of the big topics is going to be Brexit. Lots of different things happening during the party's campaigns this week. Lib Dems, Labour, and the Conservatives all having their different views on Brexit.
Well, I think what we should do is hand the whole negotiations over to Diane Abbott. Because after her brilliant performance on LBC earlier this week, with it showing her genius for maths, then I think it would really be simple. 10,000. Please, from for 300 grand. That's not bad, is it?
£30 a year sounds like
30 quid each.
30 quid a year sounds like a good deal to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Brexit is obviously going to be a bone of contention right the way through and after June 8th, KB. And lots of talk this week about this divorce bill and how much the UK is going to have to pay. But it's been quite... between the EU and the UK, it's been a little bit fractious this week.
Well, the thing is that what you have to remember is that in Europe, there are quite a few general elections this year. You've got one going on in France now. And you've got one in Germany coming up soon. And I think there's one in Holland as well. On top of that, you've got Greece is bankrupt. And they're now still not fulfilling the terms of their previous bailouts. So the IMF have held back on giving them the billions that they need. Italy is in a mess. And Italy has just gone bust. And we, the Brits, are the biggest contributors to the EU budget. And the result of that, of course, is that they're desperately trying to screw some money out of the UK to balance their own budgets and keep their own costs covered. But the EU need a good, friendly divorce as much as we do. And the thing is, at the moment, what's happening, Theresa May is getting all kinds of criticism, and the government, because they're not responding, but they're doing the right thing. You don't negotiate your deal through the media. You don't go into a meeting room with all your thoughts and requirements and demands set out in advance, because it makes people take up positions which is hard to withdraw. The fact of the matter is, you start off by thinking, well, OK, we don't get a deal, we're leaving anyway. What are you going to do about it? Now, the Brits buy far more from Europe than Europe buys from us. So if there was a trade war, it would hit Europe as hard as it hit us. But we've got alternative suppliers and alternative areas where we can go and sell. And the great thing is, if we're outside Europe, then it's only the UK has to negotiate. The problem is, when the EU go and negotiate, they then have to represent 27, 28 different views. Perfect example is the Canadian Free Trade Agreement, with Yoshe Ryu, who signed Zuid after 7 years. Then the Walloon, and then it had to go back to the local parliaments, including the regional parliaments. And the Walloons, which is the minority, ethnic minority in Belgium, you've got the Flemish and the Walloons. And the Walloons, Flemish have got the money, the Walloons are poor. And they wouldn't agree to sign it. And that one veto stalled 7 years of negotiations. They eventually resolved it by, put it bluntly, bribing the Walloons with money or concessions or something to get it through. The great thing is somebody does a deal with Britain and it's signed off, well, it's a deal done. I can tell you from personal experience that the New Zealand and Australian wines are as good as quite a few French wines. So I have an alternative there. And I'm not sure where else the French will sell their wines. And we are Mercedes' biggest customers. So it's very complicated, and when people take these lines, we're going to punish you. When are you going to punish us? When we came into the common market, we signed the contract, which was approved by all countries. And one of the conditions of the contract laid down the procedure for leaving. So all we've done is we've now followed a referendum, which is voted through by a majority of the British citizens. We've now exercised our option to leave, and now we're going through the procedure. And the uncertain, what the Europeans are trying to say is, no, we've got to agree the dowry, the mortgage, divorce payment before we discuss anything else. Well, how can you agree a, like saying, well, you're right, you agree to pay X hundred thousand pounds for that house. When we agree to that, then we'll tell you what you're going to get in the house. What kind of washing machine, what kind of dishwasher, what kind of bathroom, taps. Ridiculous. We're just playing to the gallery. All we have to do is keep calm, keep cool, and get on with it. The civil servants should be working on parallel lines of a positive deal or a very tough deal. But the problem is that Theresa May, under Cameron's so-called leadership, he was so cocky that the referendum would fail. He didn't get the civil service making any contingency plans. What if? Now, compared with the British government, what I've done in my life is obviously minuscule. But I've always planned on what ifs. You've got to have a plan B as well as plan A. But we've done no research or methodology at all, so I can understand. So we wasted a year. It's a civil service, no fault. Because they should have been doing it behind the scenes. Unless they have been doing it behind the scenes, but nobody knows. But we have to get our elections out of the way today, and then get June the 8th out of the way, and then get on with life. Hopefully, as far as I'm concerned, the Tories will get in with an increased majority, which means the Remainers, who are MPs, but don't want to carry out the wishes of their constituents, and should go, can be put in their place. The Labour government's in a terrible mess. They've got to sort themselves out internally. Can you imagine Corbyn as a Prime Minister and Diane Abbott as a Chancellor of the Exchequer? That should be fun. And maybe that, maybe after June the 8th, SNP won't have quite so much to say for themselves as they do now. I gather that the education standards, the health standards in Scotland are below the English ones, as are the Welsh. And the Welsh government is managed, is controlled by Labour and the Plaid Cymru, or whatever it's called. So I think what's a great tragedy is that they had the opportunity, wanted devolution, and they could run the country better than the people in Whitehall, 400 miles away. Well, good argument. Now demonstrate it. What has actually happened is, haven't they failed? So, whatever your political beliefs, urge all listeners and viewers, get off your backside and vote. Because at least then, you've played your part in deciding what kind of country we're going to have in the future. And here in it, here endeth the first lesson.
Well, we look forward to another lesson at the same time next week. KB, thanks very much for your time.
It'll be interesting. Then we can then talk about the local elections. And hopefully, talk about Monk's future and whether the two Italians have done the Italian job.